Howdy, Todzillaphiles, and welcome to Escaping the Cave. It's the Todzilla X Pod on the Christopher Media Network at ChristopherMedia.net. I am your humble host, Todd. How you doing? Happy Monday. Podcast is done. This is being recorded shortly before I upload it and actually release it. But I'm having a bit of an issue here today because, I've talked a lot about opinions, unsolicited opinions. I've said repeatedly that I think they're the scourge. I think they are in an anchor that's ripping society's ship in two at this point. And the key word in the phrase is unsolicited. Unsolicited opinions, where everybody seems to think that just because they have an opinion, everybody has to hear it. And more importantly, that everybody has to respect it.
So you have to hear it.
No. Used to be a day when the word opinion meant something. And the unsolicited opinion bombs, which I participated in, I've addressed this and apologized for it. I called them cluster bombs, but the unsolicited opinion bombs going off 2018 are a problem.
So how do you square that with doing your podcast, Todd?
By clicking the link and hitting the play button, you are soliciting, literally soliciting my opinion. Do you understand the difference here? I'm not dropping this into your social media feed. I'm not dropping this into a public comment section. You are seeking my opinion out by clicking that link and hitting the play button. Okay? Are you with me here? And I'm having a bit of an issue. Not with anybody else, with myself mostly, because I'm finding myself concerned. More people know about it than I really kind of wanted them to for various reasons. I'm not marketing this thing. My initial idea was to just put it up on the network and to a few people that I trust and let it go. See what happens. But life doesn't work that way. Life has, especially this year in the last month, has taken on
a life
of its own. So more of you know about this podcast than I initially anticipated. And with that has come concern that people who were not intended to hear it are hearing it. And butthurt will ensue. And these are typically people who I have a relationship of some sort with in the real world, in the organic world, not just via the internet. So I'm giving you the opportunity, if we have just a mundane relationship, an average, normal relationship in the organic world, and we don't talk politics, society, philosophy, any of that, you have to decide right now if you really, honestly, if you want to hear this. Do you want to engage in this discussion with me? That's misleading because we're not probably going to engage in a discussion at all. I'm going to be the one discussing. This is a monologue here. This isn't a conversation. Another reason I don't have any social media, I don't really want to have a conversation with most of you. Going back to the opinions, most of the opinions put forth on the internet are literally thoughtless. Cut and pasted from memes or somebody else's web page. I don't have the stomach for that anymore. It doesn't end well. So anyway, do you want to move forward with this? I'm afraid that you think you do, but you don't. And that concern is leading me to sort of pull back a little bit. I've edited several parts of the previous two podcasts out, and I almost did it again today. I've decided not to because it's an important aspect. Both of these are important aspects of the podcast and the theme, the subject matter today. Very important. And I'm sitting here trying to decide, do I cut it? Oh my God, do I neuter it? Do I castrate it so nobody gets offended? No, I can't do that. It reminds me of Howard Stern, the movie Private Parts. I'm a radio guy, so obviously that's where my head goes. But when he gets to DC 101 and starts to take the next step in his career, he has to make a decision about how much of his personal life to use on the air. It's his. So he goes on and he talks about his wife's miscarriage. Probably not the best decision. Allison gets pissed off. That was ours. Part of our life has to be ours. So I have a decision to make. Do I use my personal life or do I cut it? Do I do an authentic podcast or do I do one that's watered down? And as you'll hear later on, when I start talking about stand-up comedy and stand-ups who go to colleges, I do not believe in neutering oneself to protect someone else from being exposed to ideas. And this is key, if they have a choice whether or not to listen to it. Whether or not the opinion is solicited. You have a choice right now. You are at the box office trying to decide whether or not to buy the ticket. Do you want to hear this? Do you really think it's a good idea for you to listen to what I have to say about these things? For a lot of you, it's a really good idea to just hit the stop button and go find some cat videos or something else. If you choose yes, though, understand that moving forward, it may change our relationship. I will not stomach any outrage.
I can't believe you thought that. You can't think that.
I will not take that. I will not stomach that. I won't suffer it. Nor will I be tending to any butthurt. Much of the reason why is contained within this podcast. I'm allergic to sugar. I do not engage in public relations for your ego. I will not water my stuff down to keep from offending your ideologically religious sensibilities. Do you want to proceed with this? Do you want to move forward with this today? And I give you a few moments to think about it. Okay, that's enough of that. You still here? Good, let's go.
And I'm getting really sick of guys named Todd. You know, yeah, it's just a goofy fucking name, okay? Hi, what's your name? Todd. I'm Todd. Where are all these goofy fucking boys' names coming from? These are not real names. You want to hear a real name? Eddie. Eddie is a real name. Whatever happened to Eddie? He was here a minute ago. Joey and Jackie and Johnny and Phil, Bobby and Tommy and Danny and Bill.
By the way, if anyone here is in marketing or advertising, kill yourself. Thank you. Just planting seeds. Planting seeds is all I'm doing. No joke here. Really, seriously, kill yourself. You are no rationalization for what you do. You are Satan's little helpers. Kill yourself, kill yourself, kill yourself now. Now, back to the show. Seriously, I know the market people, they're going to be a joke coming out. There's no fucking joke. Suck a tailpipe, hang yourself, borrow a pistol from an NRA buddy, do something, rid the world of your evil fucking presence. Okay, back to the show. Planting seeds. They bear fruit? I don't know. Feel better planting. You know what bugs me, though? I know everyone here who's in marketing is now thinking the same thing. Oh, cool. Phil's going for that anti-marketing dollar. That's a huge market. Quit it. Don't turn everything into a dollar sign, please. Ooh, the plea for sanity dollar. Huge, huge market. Look at our research.
Mother, tell your children not to look my way. Tell your children not to hear my words, what they mean, what they say. Mother.
Marketing, the most evil concept ever.
Mother! Can you keep them in the dark for life? Can you hide them from the wedding world? Oh, mother! Mother! Gonna take your daughter out tonight. Gonna show her my world. Oh, mother! Blood on
Mother, tell your children not to mock my way. Tell your children not to hear my words, what they mean, what they say. Mother, can you keep them in the dark for life? Can you hide them from the waiting world? Oh, mother. Huh? Not about to see your light, but if you want to find hell with me, I can show you what it's like. Till you're bleeding. Glenn Danzig, live version of Mother. It's one of those tunes that I think a lot of people like because it fucking rocks. It always has. I don't think they listen to lyrics too much. Just a suspicion. I can't prove it. But that's what I think. Welcome to either episode 3 or 17 of the Escaping the Cave podcast and the Toddzilla X-Pod. Possibly the podcast formerly known as the Toddzilla X-Pod. I may end up keeping that. I like it. It fits. And welcome to Kalamazoo, Michigan. The snow is flying today. Lake Effect snow machine has kicked in. Got snow blowing all over the place right next to a window at ground level here. And it's neat. I was in Peru during the cyclone bomb nor'easter. What the fuck do they have to call it a cyclone bomb? Did it have a name too? A winter storm with a name like Thor? Perhaps it was Brutus. Whatever. I was in Peru when that thing hit, and I love storms. The only thing I like about winter are winter storms. I love them. I like being snowed in. I really enjoy that shit. And I haven't seen a real snowstorm since probably Chicago, late 2014, early 2015, I think. And, of course, I was in Peru when the nor'easter hit. Miss that. I am the anti-storm. Have you heard? Storms avoid me. There's something about my electromagnetic field that pushes the storm currents away from me. If you don't like storms, invite me over and give me pie. Anyway, we're sitting here doing that. And if you listened to the last podcast, sort of alluded to the fact early that I was going to listen to the Trump State of the Union speech just to bask in its ridiculousness. I completely changed my mind as the day went on. I didn't listen to 1 second of what was surely a bullshit rhetorical abortion. Didn't listen to any analysis. Spin propaganda. That's what it is, kids. Spin is propaganda. Can't believe it. More on this. Just sit tight today. I've got a lot for you. I'm going to educate you fuckers today. But no, I didn't listen to any of it. I didn't, you know, bounce around the internet to find out what people were saying about Mr. Cittadini's State of the Union address this year. I did find out, though, because you can't really insulate yourself completely from the media. I found out that the Democrats sat on their hands. Uncomfortably at times, it appears. And one woman, one of your representatives, was sitting in Congress during the State of the Union address. The bitch was playing Candy Crush on her phone. Somebody got a picture of it. It's political theater. That was engineered for you to see it. You do understand that, correct? They understand that you're sitting there with your thumb in your butt and your ideologically religious cross dangling from your little donkey cross here. That's for you to digest. Oh, the Democrat is sitting there and he is ignoring Mr. Trump. That's good. I like her even more. It's all engineered. These people don't, they don't wipe their ass without considering how it will reflect on the voters and the public. More coming. That's what the show is pretty much going to be about. An interesting thing happened this week. I'll give you a little background, more than you probably should have. We're in Kalamazoo because my girlfriend's job ended suddenly out in Massachusetts. We didn't really bond with Massachusetts all that well. So we decided that when that suddenly happened, we're going to move back toward the Midwest. We're either going to be in Kalamazoo permanently or back in Chicago, one of the two. And give you a little more background. It's all connected, I promise. Back in October, my girlfriend's parents were out in Mass. Now, you have to understand, my girlfriend's parents are great people, wonderful people. They're fanatical Christian evangelicals. There's no other way to look at it. Maybe they wouldn't like the word fanatical, but it applies. Sorry. Anyway, we're out riding around, went out to Cape Cod while they visited, and we're driving back and had a really interesting occurrence that hasn't happened. We were discussing politics. I don't discuss politics with her father, and I haven't since 2007. Whenever he brings it up, I shut my mouth like a clam, like a vice, and just let it go. Do the same thing when he tries to talk religion. Okay? Just don't engage it. There's nothing good or positive, traditionally, that can come out of any of that. And there are more important concerns. Right? Anyway, we're in the car, coming back from Cape Cod, back in October. And somehow Colin Kaepernick came up. And the whole kneeling thing and why he couldn't get a job. And it was shortly after, I think it was shortly after. I don't know how shortly. But it was after the ESPN woman, I forget her name, Jamel, whatever. I don't care what her name is, to be honest with you. But she had tweeted something that embarrassed or damaged, potentially damaged, the ESPN brand and was suspended for it. Right? She attacked the advertiser. She told people, I think, if I've got this right, it's been a few months and I really didn't do any research on this to get my facts straight. But if I'm wrong, you can go ahead and tell me, toddzillax@gmail.com. But I think she said something about not soliciting advertisers who advertised somewhere. I don't know if it was football or what it was, but oh my God, you don't do that. If you are a highly paid or even a lowly paid meat puppet, you don't do that. You're jacking with your employer's revenue streams at that point. Something you don't do. And the analogy that I used to do radio here in Kalamazoo a long time ago. But if I were to go on the air 15 years ago and, I don't know, we'll pick the Bobby Brown Kia dealership. Doesn't exist, but let's say it does. And I went on the air and I said, you know, those people over at Bobby Brown Kia, you shouldn't shop there. I would have been out on my ass that day. I wouldn't have even finished the hour on the air. You don't jack with your employer's revenue stream. You don't jack with your employer's brand. You don't damage your employer's brand. You just don't do that. And there was outrage. The outrage zombie industrial complex kicked in. God, you matter of free speech, matter of free speech. No. No, young lady. Your Twitter presence was built by your association with ESPN. That was my point that we had in this conversation. And we came down on the same side of this. And you have to understand how vastly different he and I are ideologically. This is why we don't have political conversations. Well, that happened in October. This week, we're upstairs, and I had a whole thing put together on this. Okay? I've decided not to do it, but we had a conversation. He mentioned something about, what was it? White inheritance. And how there was some paper or something written saying that white people should give up their homes. They should not, you know, give it to their kids. They should give it to a black person or a brown person. They should give up their property, their monetary inheritance, whatever it is. So, and I'm like, yeah, that's fucking stupid. That's fucking ridiculous. It's one of the stupidest things that I have ever heard in my life. So what did I do? I came down and I decided to go look for what he was talking about. And this ties perfectly into, and I'm not condemning or criticizing him. Understand that. I know better. He may listen to this. I'm producing it in his basement. But I went and looked at it. And the whole thing, I think what he was talking about, started in a comment section from some activist, I think in Boston. And it was completely spun and taken out of context, altered a little bit, and then picked up by a right-wing site to generate right-wing outrage against. They want to redistribute your wealth. They're suggesting that you should give your property and your money to a black or brown person because you're white inheritance. Now, through my little research, I didn't do much, but I found that this white inheritance thing goes far beyond that. It's sort of like a cultural inheritance thing, if I'm understanding it correctly. And there are people who actually believe, really do, that white people should be giving up their inheritance that would be normally going to their children and give it to someone who's black just simply because it's indirect reparations. So anyway, I'm not going to do this. I have a whole bunch of it right here. And you want full frontal Toddzilla? There it is, hippies. I'm not going to do it today. Let's just say, though, It actually got me to the point where I was considering defending Bill fucking Cosby. I don't like Bill Cosby. I've never liked Bill Cosby. I never liked his comedy. I never watched The Cosby Show. And quite honestly, what happened with him and his drugged rape thing didn't affect how I saw him at all, except for one thing, his social commentary on the black community. And I was about to run down that line. I'm not going to do it yet. I will keep it. But back to the original point, what happened with my girlfriend's father? He got a hold of some of the out-of-context right-wing spin material surrounding white inheritance. And he thinks it's gospel. He thinks it's political gospel. I will not bother to go up there and try to say, hey, maybe not, because, no, it doesn't work. I know better. I've learned this not with him, but I've learned it with hundreds of you political evangelicals who only take the literal word of your media, your chosen boutique media, as truth, fact, and infallible law. You do not challenge that. You can't do it. As I said in the last podcast, the switch is internal. You can't flick it. It has to be flicked manually by the person who holds it. So no, I'm not going to walk upstairs today and say, hey, look what I found. No. And therein is a huge part of the problem. And that's what we're going to get to. The bulk of this podcast is going to be one topic today. The vast majority of it will be the media. I'm going to give you, for free, in an altruistic gesture of Toddzilla kindness, I'm going to explain to you today how your fucking media works and how you, I used to have a hashtag, it's the people, you are responsible for your media.
Oh no, it's a corporate conspiracy. They are trying to dumb us down and keep us stupid.
Get the fuck away from me with that. Quit externalizing everything as some vast conspiracy from the top to keep you stupid. You're stupid by choice. All right? It's the choices you make that drive the information that's put in front of you.
Huh? What does that mean?
It's coming, Moonbeam, I promise. You too, Jethro. Let's get to it.
In every job that must be done, there is an element of fun. You find the fun, and snap, the job's a game. And every task you undertake becomes a piece of cake, a lark, a spree. It's very clear to see that a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down, the medicine go down, medicine go down. Just a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down in a most delightful way. For a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down, the medicine go down, medicine go down. Just a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down in a most delightful way.
You know what's funny is to be my age and Googling Mary Poppins. You know what's even weirder is that I never realized until I watched the video to record the song yesterday that Julie Andrews was hot. That's right, hippies. I just objectified Mary Poppins. I'm going to hell. But yeah, wow. But a spoonful of sugar makes the medicine go down. Indeed it does. In a related story, my girlfriend wants to cremate me when I die. And some days she wants to do it before I'm dead. But I'm not going to let her at all. And it's not because of any moral, religious, or personal reasons. None whatsoever, but simply because I want my Toddzilla tombstone. A post-death billboard. A final message. And I think it's going to read something like, here's Todd. He was right about all this. But he was mean to us, so we didn't listen to him. God damn, that was stupid. Then below that, maybe a picture of Oscar Wilde with the quote, "If you want to tell people the truth, make them laugh." Oh, that's the truth. Are you laughing? I'm going to leave the "or else they'll kill you" out. And unless I'm assassinated. And you may laugh. Who would want to assassinate you, Tonzilla? It's a great question. I can't even fathom anyone wanting to kill little old me. Little old congenial me. But I was back in Michigan, here in Michigan, I guess. What was it? Almost, I think it was maybe 5 years ago. And this was when I was really in the heart of my anti-teabaggery, ranting and raving, unsolicited stuff. I was a Facebook pundit, man. And some people didn't like it, go figure. And so I'm out at a bar, middle of the day, mind you, like 2 in the afternoon. My friend Brian and I go to have a burger, sit down, have a beer, just sit there and chat. And we go to this place in my hometown, little bar, sit down, have our burger, and there's a guy in there, a former, just a massive Tea Party adherent at the time. Haven't talked to him in a long time. I don't know if he still is, assuming. But he's also a big firearms guy. And he's one of those guys who's just a little off. I wouldn't necessarily classify him as crazy or insane, but he's off. There's some wire up in that gray matter that's crossed. You know? And he hates me. Something fierce. We graduated together. We got along okay. He used to ride my school bus. Some of you guys know who I'm talking about. That's okay. I've already told you the story, more than likely. But anyway, we did our rounds. We, you know, reconnected on Facebook, got along okay, reminisced about the olden days, and then the politics shit took over, and yeah. Anyway, we're in this bar. Middle of the day, nobody else, maybe two other people are there, whatever. Pretty empty. But he's there. And he's in the back corner of this place. I don't know if he was eating or drinking. I don't know what he was doing there. All I could see was him, and he stink-eyed me. It was beyond stink-eye. It was like he was trying to kill me with a glare the entire time he was there. He left before we did, walked by, continued to glare at me with this creepy-ass, I don't know, it reminds me of like a Timothy McVeigh or Jeffrey Dahmer smile grin on his face, right? And I remember distinctly, and I told Brian this, guy who's at the table with me, I'm like, dude, I got this feeling that when I walk out into the parking lot, I'm going to be assassinated by that guy. That was the vibe that I got from him. So let's just say this is part of my final wish, okay? And since you're here, I can tell you, and then you can assure me that my will be done, okay? Thy will be done. That if I end up getting assassinated or shot by some batshit teabagger or green teabagger, either way, I want Oscar Wilde on my grave. And if they don't kill me, I'll take care of it. If you want to tell people the truth, make them laugh. And if somebody kills me, add the "or else they'll kill you" part to it. Are you with me? Are you understanding where I'm coming from? I want this done. You don't have to put the picture of Oscar Wilde on there. You can put a picture of me grinning with my fancy new teeth. Anyway, back to the point. I told you to get used to the tangents. The original point, though, is that the reason that you have to make people laugh if you're going to tell them the truth is because, at their essence, people are uninterested in uncomfortable and unsweetened truth. A spoonful of sugar makes the medicine go down. That's where the song came from. Blunt honesty that bruises the ego, people hate it. If it challenges their worldview, creates any sort of cognitive dissonance, they hate it. They can't stand it. They don't want it. They want it away from them. It's genetic. It's ego. It's tribalism. Surrounding yourself with agreeable voices. Seeking them out when you suit up in your virtual avatar and take to the Matrix. Only those opinions that support your doctrine and your worldview will be tolerated, right? Unless you make people laugh and you wrap these truths inside little Jolly Ranchers for the infantile childish ego. A spoonful of sugar makes the medicine go down. And there's another element to this as well. You have to give people hope. You've got to provide them the promised land. And I understand this to a degree. I'm not criticizing that too much. But if you don't provide that, or if there's no apparent avenue, whether it's made up or it's truthful, people will not look at reality. They will not look at the reality in which they live. You've got to give them the spoonful of hope as well. I call this another little quick story. Back in September, I was engaged in basically sort of an existential writing marathon, really just racking my head hours and hours on end for like a week. Okay, and I decided, oh, God damn it, I need a break. I need something to just escape in and laugh. And I remember the movie Sausage Party. Remember, you know, the animated cartoons who were vile and vulgar and just wrong. Like one of the main characters, the evil character, the sort of the villain in the movie's a douche. A supermarket douche with a Boston accent. It's great. I loved it. Until one part came up. Even in the movie Sausage Party, I could not shut my fucking brain off. And it came up, it just dovetailed perfectly into this idea that I was just talking about, that you have got, for whatever reason, to give the infantile human ego a fairy tale, a sense of hope that Santa Claus is bringing presents, that you're going to go to heaven, something down that line. Right? Allow me to play it for you now. Enjoy.
Everything we've been led to believe is a lie. When we get chosen by the gods, they're choosing us for death, murder, automatic expiration. The great beyond is bullshit.
What? That's crazy talk.
You liar!
I know you don't want to believe it, but I have proof.
What about the extra virgin olive oil? My flaps will be dry for an eternity. I can't have dry flaps. I can't.
Okay, whoa, easy. Guys, easy. Look, I have a plan. We can run.
I can't run. I'll melt.
Okay, then we'll hide.
Where? I'm huge.
Then we'll fight.
I ain't fighting alongside a bunch of fruits.
What? Ever, you nutjob.
So, we cannot run, we cannot hide, and we cannot stand up to them because they're fucking gods, and they're immortal! So basically, there's no hope, and we're royally fucked!
Hey guys, you want to believe that? Or this?
I don't like bad things.
Me either!
We choose the more pleasant thing!
Yeah, I mean, what this sausage is saying, it's just the theory!
No, it's not a theory, you morons! It's a fact!
Open your fucking eyes! Don't be so weak!
You, senor, have no bedside manner!
What? I have bedside manner!
You don't respect anyone else's beliefs!
You intolerant piece of shit!
They truly are monsters.
I tried to warn everyone, but they didn't believe me.
Of course they didn't. You just called them all a bunch of fucking idiots. You can't just slam their beliefs. You have to show them that there's a better way. You need to inspire them like you inspired me. You need to give them hope.
Yeah, I cut the the final chunk of that out. I added a little something to it back in October. I decided to take it out for the purposes of the cast. But that's true. People will not listen. Even if you tell them the sky is in fact blue, they will not listen to you if you don't sugarcoat whatever it is you're trying to get into their brains. They won't do it. And I am not good at that. See, this is where I fail. And in honesty, I always will. I'm never going to be good at this. I'm self-aware enough to see that, kids. I know myself well enough to understand that. I don't engage in public relations for the ego and the self-esteem and feelings. I don't do that. I've never had. Maybe I did when I was younger, but I don't anymore.
Godzilla, he's mean. He's mean to me. He's a dick. He's not saying happy things.
You know what? If that's what you need, fine. You're not part of the solution. Go away. You're not part of my solution anyway. You don't need me. And I sure as fuck don't need you. And that's okay. And that's not a blanket condemnation of everybody. I understand it. I get it. You're just not going to get that here. and I'm not going to try to give it to you. I'm not wired that way. My short and admittedly self-absorbed foray into stand-up comedy, 2014 showed me how remarkable George Carlin and Bill Hicks really are. And were, I should say. Making people laugh. Giving them this spoonful of sugar. It's fucking hard. It's difficult to do if you're wrapping it in anything significant. But it's what keeps the quote-unquote doctor likable. You've got to have likability. And I realize that. I can't help it. I am not the cultural jester. I wish I could be. You have to candy coat it, and you have to give people hope. Real or imagined, doesn't matter. People need it. Absolutely true. And the thing is, you have to treat most people, and I say most, like defensive children, if you want to reach anyone but your own choir effectively. And in the era of an out-of-control, outrage industrial complex, more coming, that won't even work very often if you're not sugarcoating everything. Even jokes now feel weaponized to the nerfed snowflakes among us. You can't tell a joke. You can wrap something in all the sugar you want to. As Rich likes to call them, the nerfed snowflakes. Oh my God, it's assault, right? Every disagreeable observation, even slathered in humorous medicine, it seems, is an assault on another human being if they disagree with him. A lot of comedians are either afraid to play colleges now, which used to be their bastions, right? They're either afraid to play these colleges or will actually castrate their material just because everyone's waiting to be verbally assaulted by the ideologically religious blasphemy. You know, these trigger words. Or simply an opinion that runs counter to their programming. All in these, as I said, these supposed bastions of free speech and higher learning. It's hard to argue with people who say colleges have become liberal indoctrination centers when almost everyone there recites the same doctrine verbatim and won't tolerate anything they perceive as blasphemous against that. Hey, Milo, whatever the fuck your last name is. I'd go going to Berkeley workout for you. Well, on the publicity end, very, very well. And here's the thing. I debated whether or not to bring this up. But it goes far beyond college campuses as well, because students themselves move beyond the classrooms. I mentioned my foray into Chicago stand-up scene a minute ago. I've hesitated to talk about this. Out of the fear that I might offend some friends I made there. But, you know, I've never personally encountered, and this is the honest-to-God truth, this is not hyperbole here, I have never personally encountered a more closed intellectual ecosystem than that entire scene in Chicago. Every stand-up, with very, very few and isolated exceptions now, or a couple, but they were raging liberals. I don't know how many were gay. But you know what? Being the gay comedian became a worn-out trope after a little while. It was cliche. Everybody, it seemed like six stand-ups at these open mics in a row were the gay comedian. Cliche. Oh, another one. Wonderful. I get to hear about his perspective of being a gay man in Chicago again, just like the last five guys. Or women. Finding a comedian who was actually pro-gun, like finding a snipe. And they were all anti-sports as well. It's hilarious. That was another one. It was like being a sports fan made you barbaric and unevolved somehow. It was a click. I said this in private conversations after hours. It was as if all these young would-be comedians had been given a list of acceptable topics and told to stick to it. Actually, you know what it reminded me of was the liner cards that we had in the radio booths. And we were actually told, I swear to God, I heard this multiple times, that the art of being on the radio, being a voice artiste, right, was figuring out how to cleverly deliver the bullet points and do it creatively. That was the art. It's kind of the same thing. You've got this list of topical bullet points that are safe in this closed ecosystem in the comedy scene in Chicago, and people pick from them and basically reword a lot of the same fucking things. But here's the thing, okay? That closed ecosystem was not closed by force, okay? No one stood at the door vetting material, and no one was, you know, barred because of their political leanings at all. It wasn't intentional, right? They didn't have to be, though. They didn't have to be excluded and vetted. It was a self-cleaning system. All conversations, in addition to 99% of the onstage material, made it clear that this was a liberal gathering. Any conservative views were implicitly rejected. Sometimes more than implicitly, too, if, like me, you sat quietly and sort of eavesdropped on the conversations. Here's the thing, kids. If I'm ever in your presence and I'm sitting quietly in the corner, kind of looking in your general direction, I'm listening. I'm evaluating. Maybe you'll say I'm judging. But I'm digesting something. That's probably 80% of what I did in my time in Chicago. I was given access by a few people. But I wasn't nearly accepted enough into that community because I wasn't around and I never gave myself a chance to develop. They didn't know who the fuck I was, to be honest with you. A few people did. But I used that time very wisely and very well and very effectively by sitting there listening to these conversations that these other very, very talented, funny people were having. And again, it was all liberal doctrine when it got into anything political, anything ideological. They think that anybody who voted for Trump has to be a redneck, has to be inbred, has to be somehow defective. They just do not understand it, and they don't want to. That's the thing, because they're insulated. It's an insular, closed ecosystem where the only thoughts that are explored are of the acceptable variety, the acceptable liberal variety. Essentially, it became a closed ecosystem because it was an ideological clique. I mentioned that word a minute ago. As much as a gathering of those with, you know, dreams of headlining or even, you know, an HBO comedy special. But any young, insecure comic with ideas running counter to the comic mob, how would they feel coming into that place? They probably feel an immense pressure to avoid, I guess, inevitable judgment, moral scrutiny. How are you expected to hone your material and your delivery, your comic delivery, when you know the audience of comics, other comics at these open mics, probably despise what you'll have to say already? People sometimes wonder why there aren't many conservative comedians. The implication is that because the creative, funny people are all liberals, and that there are more liberals than conservatives. That's the implication. I don't believe that. And I'm not going to speak for any place other than what I've seen, and that would be Chicago and Tucson. But I have a pretty strong suspicion that it's because there's no place for a conservative, say like a pro-gun conservative, to safely hone his craft and develop the confidence, which is key, the confidence required to take the stage and tell jokes, to try to make people laugh with your creations. It would be something akin to going to church to discuss the brilliance of Richard Dawkins. How receptive do you suppose that audience at church would be? Know the room, right? Know the room. It's not hard to get to know an open mic room in Chicago and realize that it's a liberal clique. Moving forward, I can only speak directly for radio, and it didn't apply with one possible exception, and that being the time that I spent in that pretentious liberal cradle of Santa Fe. But I suspect that something similar is at play throughout the rest of the media in general. Especially in Hollywood. I don't think that there's a gatekeeper there making sure you're liberal. But as things stand now, a conservative celebrity, they stick out like a turd in entertainment's punch bowl. Doesn't belong there. That's how it feels, right? Noam Chomsky went into self-correcting systems in manufacturing consent. Now, this was written before Fox News really created the boutique news model. But I suspect that the same idea applies, only applied to ideology and content now. Manufacturing Consent, it's by Noam Chomsky. It's worth a read if you can think abstractly enough to update the concepts to 2018 and apply it to ideological purity and apply the economic benefits of tailoring your message to consumer cattle. Acceptable discussion boundaries, all that. Noam Chomsky, Manufacturing Consent, worth a read.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start. Guaranteed to blow your head apart.
You know, when I was a kid, I would hear that song on the radio every now and then, and I loved it. Didn't know what it was called, had no idea, but I absolutely loved it. Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. It's Emerson, Lake & Palmer's Car and Evil number 9 from the 70s. Oh, great tune. Love it. And I think it speaks pretty well to where I'm going with all this today, as we get into the meat of this bitch. The show that never ends. Sort of a tune about a circus, and that's what your media has become. And I'm going to start with something that's going to horrify you. It's going to hit your ego, you're not going to like it, and you're probably going to sit there and flip me off. Go ahead. Get those fingers ready. The news media knows you better than you know yourself. So does Madison Avenue. Advertisers. They're paid to know you better and exploit what they've learned. That's why they make insane amounts of money. People in media companies who do that well will make ungodly amounts of money by putting your glazed over eyeballs in front of dick pill commercials. I mean, it was, Alcoa and Ovaltine back in his day, but that, as Ed Murrow figured out 60 years ago, is the for-profit media model in a nutshell. They are in the business of producing whatever slop gets you to advertising's trough. That's it. And the talking heads, the meat puppets that do that best, take home obscene amounts of these ad dollars. It works the same whether you're a Fox News blowhard or a pixied MSNBC lesbian. Doesn't matter. Nothing illustrated this better than an article I read several years ago in Forbes, of all places. And this was while Glenn Beck was at the height of his media power and influence. They'd interviewed him, and he admitted flat out, with no ambiguity, that he didn't give a rat's ass about ideology or politics. It's the money, stupid. And his product was crafted every day to maximize consumption. It was reality-based entertainment, and it was packaged as news and spin toward those with a specific worldview and political doctrine. Nothing more. And he made insane amounts. Do you remember how big he was maybe about 10 years ago? Maybe a little less than that. He figured out how to give people what they want daily and laughed all the way to the bank. Facts, context, and social responsibility be damned. He learned how to exploit what I call the Don Quixote complex. I may open that can today. He learned, like Hitler, there's your Hitler reference, how to lather up and exploit the mob, you. And he also learned how to do it for profit. Do you listen to Alex Jones at all? He is the contemporary poster child today, but he's far from alone. They've all taken the boutique news model, perfected by Fox News in the 90s, and made and continue making ridiculous money with it. I railed against Glenn Beck. I called him like the asshat king. I think I called him the Pied Piper, the fucktard Pied Piper, or something like that a long time ago. But here's the thing. When I read that, coming from media background myself, it may shock you to hear it, but I developed at least a small amount of respect for the man. Because at least he knew what he was doing. He didn't believe the shit coming out of his mouth. He knew that the last American industry, the one thing that America does best, better than anybody else in the world, fleecing the fucktards. Old hashtag of mine. Fleecing the fucktards. You guys want this shit? You're actually going to buy it? I'll take the money. That's what that boils down to. And in this context, and for being upfront, at least with Forbes, about the fact that he's a naked and exploitative entertainer. He understands that. He understood he was an entertainer. And his script was based loosely on current events. That's it. The song and dance, man. Giving you what you want. I can respect that. A little bit. Merle Edward R. was prophetic in 1958 with his warnings about the future dictated by a for-profit free press. And he was just as prophetic as Eisenhower was a couple of years later when he rang the alarm bell about the military-industrial complex. Those two things, I think, came within 2 years of each other. And both still apply even more today. But even since then, even since him, even since Murrow in 1958, there were warnings all along the way. The movie Network, do you remember that? Made about 1976, 42 years ago this year. And it seems like a fucking documentary that could be just released last week. I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore. Did you see how it ended? And why? That character, what's his name? It's not, I forget the actor's name, but he's the CEO of the Broadcasting Corporation. That is one of the creepiest and most accurate depictions, I think, of the corporate media. And what it's about. Money. Money, 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 money. It's like any other corporation. None of this happened yesterday. None of it started with Trump. None of it started with Obama or even George W. That began when the networks figured out and embraced. Maybe they always knew it, but they figured out and then they embraced that rather than losing money, their news departments could be profitable. Insanely so. If they gave people the news that they wanted. Boutique news. Now, Fox News, now say what you want about them, but they were ahead of the curve here when they saw the undeniable, right or wrong, okay? But it is undeniable that there's a liberal slant to the media. The corresponding hole in the market as well. They saw that and they saw how to fill it. Rush Limbaugh style. Not only did they fill the hole in the market, they showed just how little people cared for the amount of truth their spin of choice contained. And they also saw and learned how eager they were to ingest propaganda as long as it's their propaganda. And most importantly, they showed how profitable, again, it could be. Insanely. With Fox, the other networks had to adjust. That's how it works, man. There was a new, highly rated network now competing for these precious ratings-based ad dollars. And one thing the media is insanely good at, incredibly good at, is seeing what's working across the street and copying it. Do it all the time. Inevitably, the liberal version of Fox was destined to slink forth. MSNBC was it. Now, of course, they wanted to be positioned as the anti-Fox, but in reality, they've always been Pepsi to Fox's Coke. Same shit, different flavor. That's it. It's real simple. And since Trump, nothing has changed, nothing has improved, despite all the claims of the rebirth of real journalism since the orange baboon was hatched about a year ago. Here's the thing. It can't change. Stop it. It can't. This is the most important part of this. You have to understand this. Mostly, it's you. You. You, 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 you. Do I need to say it in Spanish? Es tú. I don't even know if that's right. The media consumer. It's you. You have countless spins of choice out there now, right? It's hand-delivered to your devices every minute, sometimes more than once a minute. Every 10 seconds, you can have your spin of choice, a new version of it in your hand. It's what you want. You, the consumer, unless you're uncommonly self-aware, and most of you ain't, sorry, has no need, or more importantly, no want for hard facts, real news and analysis. You don't want that, collectively. I can hear the outrage. Oh, I do. Nah, do you? Are you sure? Do you think Slate or Huffington Post is giving you real news and real analysis and not spin propaganda and boutique news? Do you really believe that? Over on the right, hey, you guys, you think Breitbart's giving you the real deal? Fox? Do you really honestly believe that? If you do, you don't belong listening to this podcast. You need to get back to me when your balls drop, because they're not. And you have got to. The rest of you, if you're on the fence about this, you have got to see this. It's the single most important thing, I think, that's going on right now, culturally, in the country. It's what's fueling and feeding the echo chambers. It's what's stoking the mobs, feeding the tribes, however you want to look at it. It's the boutique news that you're mistaking for fact-based reality. It's spin. And spin, fact-based spin, is by definition propaganda. Do you understand that? You know, there are countless places for these mobs to light their little pitchforks. And an insane amount of competition to be the pitchfork retailer of choice as well. In 2018, the only publicly funded media is NPR and PBS, at least in the U.S., and it itself is a failure. Because despite Moonbeamer's claims to the contrary, it's funded, and thus, because it's dependent on public funding and donations, it's tailored to liberals. They're the ones that support it, therefore that's the product they get. If they quit producing that product, the money dries up and PBS goes away. NPR goes away. All they've done is eliminate the flashy production elements and the hyped voiceovers. They don't have the breaking news thing at the bottom. Other than that, ideologically, it's as ideologically pure as anything. We're at least close to it. They may edge toward the middle a little bit, but I wonder if they do. I wonder if that's just perception because it's toned down. Now, the radio station I worked at in Santa Fe, they toned everything down too, but it was still a fart-sniffing liberal outlet. Just because it wasn't yelling at you, you can still whisper propaganda. Lebensraum. See, I whispered it. Still horseshit. Right, Adolf? Need more Hitler references in this podcast. Feels naked. Not enough Hitler here. Remind me next week. I'll give you some more Hitler. This is what I'm trying to say. If you think Amy Goodman is politically neutral, I'm going to have to forcefully bathe you. Because that woman is not neutral about anything. Sorry. She's just not. Now, it's not just television. All the rest of our domestic media is profit-based. Online, television, print, everywhere, everyone depends on selling advertising. That means they require viewers. They require clicks to simply survive. It's a basic, simple thing. Okay, class, now this is going to be on the Capitalist Media 101 final. Are you ready? Here's the question. What does that mean they have to do? That's right. Who's a smart Toddzilla file? You are. Good boy. They have to create content that the market, you are the market, by the way, wants to consume. Or else you, the market goers, go elsewhere. And the media, what was that, Howard Cosell? And the media, or any other item on any other marketplace, dries up, dies, goes away, and rots. That's how it works. Now, no, stop right there. I hear you. I still have this ESP, man, and I hear some of you saying that,
and it should be like this, and it should be the other way, and it should be like that.
Lenny Bruce fuckers, go back to the first podcast. What should be is your wet dream fantasy. It's not that way. The should be shit is a terrible, terrible lie you keep repeating to yourself while expecting the reality that all of the rest of us over here share to conform to. Shut up. Stop it. You're not helping. That is not how it is. This is a profit-based media. They require money. Therefore, they require viewers to sell to advertisers. Therefore, they are forced to create the product you want. You with me? What you want to hear is what they are forced to give you. So you'll put your eyeballs in front of Viagra pill commercials. Is any of this fucking sinking in? Media companies, they must give the public what they want. We live in a free society. We're free to choose. And being part of an enlightened citizenry, you know what? It's not compulsory. In a free country, we're given the choice to be ridiculously distracted, willfully ignorant, tribalized, and insulated from reality and truth by happy facts if we like. And free to consume whatever information we choose. Free to do it. And the free market is forced to adjust to that. Do you understand that? And therein lies the problem. It's the one that Ed Murrow saw decades ago.
Think for yourself. Question authority. Think for yourself. Question authority. Throughout human history, as our species has faced the frightening, terrorizing fact that we do not know who we are or where we're going in this ocean of chaos, it has been the authorities, the political, the religious, the educational authorities who attempted to comfort us by giving us order, rules, regulations, forming in our minds their view of reality. To think for yourself, you must question authority and learn how to put yourself in a state of vulnerable, open-mindedness, chaotic, confused vulnerability to inform yourself. Think for yourself, for yourself, for yourself. Question authority, question authority, question authority. Think for yourself, think for yourself. Question authority, question authority. Think for yourself, for yourself. Question authority, question authority.
Yeah, it's a common refrain right there. Think for yourself, question authority. Think for yourself, question authority. See, the thing is that people tend to apply that only to authority of someone else's nature, something that they feel like is being forced upon them, right? What about the authority of your own ideological church? Why don't you question that just as hard as you question somebody else's? See, that's the thing that I think I'm getting to here, that just because, you know, these media outlets, whoever, reinforce what you want to believe, you're not questioning authority. Most certainly not. And I used to work for a guy in Denver, 12 years ago, a guy named Michael Corbin. He was a talk show host, syndicated once upon a time back in the 90s. He had the Paranet show, which was kind of like Coast to Coast AM, I think, with Art Bell and George Norrie now. Neat show for what it is. But it was down that line, right? And he actually filled in for Alex Jones early on in Alex's career, I think somewhere around the year 2000. Set in for him once. Alex didn't pay him. Stiffed him. What a dick. Anyway, Michael was doing a show from his bedroom in 2006, and he was on a couple of radio stations around Colorado. Basically the same idea, something like a coast-to-coast conspiracy-based thing. And it's really too bad because he died in the spring of 2008, had a stroke, driving his car down 9th Street in Capitol Hill in Denver. And it's really too bad he died because he was one of the best broadcasters, content aside, I'll get to that in a minute. But he was one of the best broadcasters I had ever seen. Definitely, honestly, he was the best broadcaster I ever personally watched do his job. Fantastic. The man had pipes. The man could, oh, he was smooth. And he was smart, so fucking smart. But he was also a conspiracy junkie. And I was sort of in that vein, I guess, as well, back in 2006, 12 years ago, during the height of the Bush years and the Iraq war and all that. Yeah, I wanted to believe that all the things that were going on didn't really have anything to do with me, that it was sort of an externalized force dumbing us down and keeping us stupid. I was out of radio completely at the time. It was before my last morning show gig in Santa Fe. But he was grooming me to do something like what he was doing. He was sort of a mentor for a while until I figured out now, I don't want to do this. And then we went on our separate ways. Never saw him again. Unfortunately, talked to him once shortly before he died, but that was it. And it's sad that he was doing this show in Denver before podcasting. It really is, because he would have made just a tremendous... This would have been his venue. Would have been incredible. I'm not sure podcasting was around then, but I know he wasn't doing it, and he didn't have the equipment to do it. May have been too early for him. But anyway, he died of a stroke in the spring of 2008. And because of the nature of his show, and a few other things, we won't get into all of it today. Maybe some other time. But his listeners, and people that knew him on the Paranet show, were all convinced, despite the fact that he was a 2-3-pack-a-day smoker, he was severely overweight, he had a lot of health problems going on. Despite all of that, it never made sense to them that he died of a stroke.
Oh, they say it's a stroke. Yeah, the deep state got him. He had enemies. Yeah, they killed him. They injected him with something while he slept.
And those rumors, I swear to fucking God, are still out there. They wanted to believe that. They didn't want to believe that Michael could just die because he didn't take care of himself. There had to be this external power out there that was keeping him down. Right? Conspiracy theories today, in 2018, piss me off. And that's exactly why. Because 9 times out of 10, it's about externalizing accountability and avoiding taking responsibility for your place in the society. You know what I say? It's the people. When I'm talking about the media, it bothers people. They don't want to say, they don't want to hear anything that I've been railing about for the last, I don't know, hour or whatever it is. They hate it. They do not want to feel like they are part of the problem. And conspiracy theories, typically, if you listen to them, if you get really to the root of it, it's absolving them, the little man, the plebeians. It's absolving them of responsibility for the fate and the situation in which they reside. Escapism. Most of them are. And in this case, one of the most enraging conspiracy theories that I hear and that I've heard for a really long time is the one about how the corporate media is part of a vast fucking plot to keep us, distracted, docile, and stupid. Really? Is that what it is? Or is it simply the fact that we want to be distracted, docile, and stupid, so they give us the product that we want? You ever hear Occam's razor? Simplest solution's usually the right one. I don't even think you have to pull that out of the razor case today, kids. Now, again, I confess this. I once bought into this. Back in the Bush years. Like I said, I was young, I was unsophisticated, and I was stupid, and I apologize if I subjected to any current remaining Toddzilla files. If I subjected you to any of that, Phil, I am so sorry. I really am. No, it's not a conspiracy, Ghost Rider. Corporations exist to do one fucking thing, make money and maximize shareholder profits. That's it. That's why they exist. And in the case of the print media, they exist simply to try not going extinct today. The point is very simple. I'll say it again, and it will not be accompanied by your spoonful of sugar. You get what you want. we get what we collectively deserve. Government, media, whatever. That's how free societies work. And that's what we live in, believe it or not. The fact that you're listening to this podcast proves it. The fact that I'm not going to be hauled off in a black van later on tonight proves it. I have been to unfree societies. I've been to Nicaragua, where I've had to watch what I say. I've been to Peru, where the police are a little, shall we say, corrupt. I've been places that most of you haven't. This is a very, very free society. We have choices, therefore, we have responsibility, and we have personal accountability to the choices we make, both individually and collectively. Personal and collective responsibility. You understand?
But we're the evolved ones, Todd. We're the ones...
Shut up. Stop it. Shh. You're part of the collective. And Moonbeam, I'm going to say this as calmly as I can. One more time. You don't get to force your vision of utopia, what you think should be, on anyone else. You don't get to force feed Huffington Post to people. This is a collective effort. Was that said calmly enough for you? Did that sink in? I really like quinoa and kale. Is that enough sugar? I wish you could see my face right now. Listen, let me put it another way. Collectively, if real news and organizations who were held truly accountable to actual facts were in demand, they'd be thriving today as much as Fox News and CNN thrive and make money. If there were an unfilled hole screaming to be filled, someone like Fox did with conservative media back in the 90s, 20-some-odd years ago, someone would fill it. And no, not out of some goofy altruistic interest in saving the country. Grow the fuck up. No, that's not why they would do it. The hole would be filled because the demand for such a product would be met, and it would, in return, altogether now, make money. There's no demand for it. At least not enough of one to turn a profit. It's not in demand. And I hate to break it to you, but that's why it doesn't exist. It's not a conspiracy. Think about it. We have more options for singing bass to hang on your wall than we do real news. There are more pills to get your flaccid dick hard than outlets to make yourself part of the enlightened citizenry. Yeah, I know there's some butthurt going on out there, but if you think, and if you're saying,
but Todd, what about Slate, and what about American Thinker, and Huffington Post, and Natural News, and Patriot Nation?
This is the willful ignorance I'm talking about. You're not listening, and you're wasting your time. Hit the stop button, go have a snack, and when you're ready, start this recording over again, or please just go away. I'm not going to swat that stupid down anymore. I can't do it. I don't have it in me. I am not a saint. I'm a podcaster, not a saint. Turn the page, baby. And I'll bet you there are some of you out there who absolutely agree with what I'm saying, and you're trying to think of ways to invoke change. Right? Right now. Trying to figure out how to force that media to give the country what it needs right now, right? You're trying to figure that out, aren't you? You can't do it. You cannot do it. Maybe you're thinking you're going to go boycott. Well, idea come through your head, has it? Maybe you're going to write an email to MSNBC or CNN or Fox News saying, I'm not going to watch you anymore. A boycott. I heard the guys on Unregimented talking about this a few weeks ago. I wish I was on that show. Because unless you are sufficiently organized, and you're not, proudly and loudly proclaiming your righteous intention to take your special little eyeballs and dollars away does absolutely nothing. Read your Chomsky, kids. It has precisely, exactly the same effect as your suicide. Not even a speed bump on the corporate thoroughfare. Disconnect? Detox? Absolutely. Abso-fucking-lutely. Quit watching it. Unplug from it. I absolutely advocate for that. But don't do it simply because you want to be seen with your activist thumb stuck up your ass. On the other hand, if you want to begin to see clearly again, if you really, really want that, absolutely unplug and detox. Detach. This ties into a very long and expansive little opus I've got coming up. Some of you have heard about the social media disease. That's coming. This ties directly into that. Not going to get to it today. But I will offer you a quick anecdote about what happens once and shortly after you disconnect and start to detox from this stuff. This took place last summer. I took a real quick hitchhiking trip, essentially around Lake Champlain, eastern New York, western Vermont. And the next to the last day, I was in, Springfield, Vermont, I think was the name of the town, right off the interstate there. But I was sitting inside of a trucker's lounge and made the colossal mistake of trying to watch NBC's Today Show. Now, I'd been almost entirely disconnected from television completely for about 3 months at this point. I'm resensitized now. Television, like, you know, politics and ideological religion, it hits my palate fully and accurately now, and it's putrid. Top to bottom, your media from children's programming all the way up to MSNBC and Fox News is little more than a deluge of advertising embedded in and masquerading as entertainment. Even by those really shitty standards, the Today Show and its cast of convulsively giggling marionettes, so inauthentically euphoric, they seem to have overdosed on Soma. The Today Show sets itself apart. Terrible. Now, from my detached, under-stimulated perspective, the one of a hitchhiker had been out for a week and who was in a random trucker's lounge, the Today Show, still with Matt Lauer at this point, seemed to me to serve two supposedly undetectable purposes. First and foremost, capitalist-slash-consumerism reinforcement. That's what I saw first and foremost. It was everywhere, reminding the herd that the mammon-driven life is indeed the path to existential purpose. You need this, and you need this. This is why you work. Stuff is your salvation. And all the gadgets that they showed, which were obviously paid product placement, it was always delicious. You absolutely must buy this. It's amazing. The snorts were added for effect. And the latest pop culture and entertainment promotions designed to establish subconscious standards and notions of success, the bar of social acceptability while generating silent comparisons.
Well, I'm not like that. I should be.
Hey, Johnny, cue up sticks. Then there were the news snippets, reminding all the cattle who were gorging at their electronic trough that morning just how dangerous the world really is. You need to remain safe inside your hermetically sealed cage with all the stuff you've been convinced equates to life. It's your identity. That shiny shit is who you are, and it needs constant protection. Now this. Get Comcast Home Security. Look how safe it makes this paid 5-year-old actress appear to feel. Do you see the connection there? They terrify you with these stories. They create the problem in front of you. And then in the advertising, they offer you the solution. Everything wants to kill your daughter. Oh, here's Comcast Home Security. Do you see how it fucking works? Most of you don't. Well, I did. You know, the coup de grace was Matt Lauer. What a pile of shit. He was hawking Smucker's fucking jelly by exploiting people on their 100th birthday.
We're going to put them on the TV
and sell Smuckers. NBC put their faces, these old people, these 100-year-old people, in the middle of a computer-generated Smuckers label. Using old people to hawk Smuckers. Really, fuckers? No dignity. No dignity at all, huh? No fundamental shame whatsoever. None. And so few, so precious few, even suspect the motive of their media. Now, I'm not going to bother with the delirious zombies who'd staggered into New York City from around the country just to spend all morning herded inside of a people pen outside NBC studios in hopes of validating their lives by saying, "I'm on the TV, woo!" Hey, did I just bother? I guess I did. I detoxed, I detached, and all of this was deafening. It was so clear, once again. And I was sitting in this trucker's lounge, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock in the morning, charging my phone and berating a television set out loud. How the fuck can anybody watch this horse shit? How has this been on the air for 60 fucking years? Eventually, disgust overcame the curiosity, right? And I was also afraid. I mean, I swear to God, I was literally afraid someone was going to hear me and kick me out of there. Well, yelling at the television. So I quickly found something else to occupy the time while I charged my batteries. Green Acres. I found Green Acres. It's great. Both new and decades-old media desensitization is real, kids. You get desensitized. You're the frog in the stupid cliche pot, and it's getting worse. I've felt the sensory assault whenever I've returned from Latin America, including this last time, 2 weeks ago. As soon as I step off the plane, it's as though I'm bombarded at the airport, and what I was conditioned to before leaving absolutely astounds me. Social media and the internet in general have the same vile effects, and it is far, far, far from benign. But it's treatable, thankfully. You can reclaim your senses with some mindful focus. As I said a minute ago, highly recommend fully disconnecting from as much media as possible, especially television and the internet, for an extended period of time. Yes, even NPR Moonbeam. Then reconnecting, briefly, to see how exposure to electronic media has conditioned you. If I were less concerned with overall brevity, which at this point, I don't see what the point is, but I'd repeat the parts about the outrage industrial complex, boutique news, and the accompanying ideological riptide drift as other examples. Frog in the pot, man. I'd use that analogy. It's overused, but even the frog is mercifully released, if only by boiling death. He gets out of it. You're not as lucky. The marketing and branding drill just lobotomizes your soul a little bit each and every day.
It is much easier to use this money-making machine of television and radio merely as a conduit through which to channel anything that will be paid for. In that way, one has the illusion of power without responsibility. In order to progress, it need only go backward. Back to the time when singing commercials were not allowed on news reports. I recently asked a network official why this great rash of five-minute news reports, including three commercials on weekends. And he replied, because that seems to be the only thing we can sell. Well, in this kind of complex and confusing world, you can't tell very much about the why of the news in a broadcast where only 3 minutes is available for news. If radio news is to be regarded as a commodity, only acceptable when saleable, and only when packaged to fit the advertising appropriation of a sponsor, then I don't care what you call it. I say it isn't news. One of the basic troubles with radio and television news is that both instruments have grown up as an incompatible combination of show business, advertising, and news. And when you get all three under one roof, the dust never settles. Sometimes there is a clash between the public interest and the corporate interest. Upon occasion, economics and editorial judgment are in conflict. And there is no law which says that dollars will be defeated by duty. There is no suggestion here that networks or individual stations should operate as philanthropies. But I can find nothing in the Bill of Rights or in the Communications Act which says that they must increase their net profits each year lest the Republic collapse. I do not suggest that news and information should be subsidized by foundations or private subscription. So it seems that we cannot rely on philanthropic support or foundation subsidies. We cannot follow the sustaining route. The networks cannot pay all the freight. And the FCC cannot, will not, or should not discipline those who abuse the facilities that belong to the public. What then is the answer? Do we merely stay in our comfortable nests, concluding that the obligation of these instruments has been discharged when we work at the job of informing the public for a minimum of time? Or do we believe that the preservation of the Republic is a seven-day-a-week job, demanding more awareness, better skills, and more perseverance than we have yet contemplated? I am frightened by the imbalance, the constant striving to reach the largest possible audience for everything, by the absence of a sustained study of the state of the nation. Heywood Broun once wrote, "No body politic is healthy until it begins to itch." I would like television to produce some itching pills rather than this endless outpouring of tranquilizers. It can be done. Maybe it won't be, but it could. But let us not shoot the wrong piano player. Do not be deluded into believing that the titular heads of the networks control what appears on their network. They all have better taste. All are responsible to stockholders. And in my experience, all are honorable men. But they must schedule what they can sell in the public market. And this brings us to the nub of the question. In one sense, it rather revolves around the phrase heard frequently along Madison Avenue, the corporate image. I am not precisely sure what this phrase means, but I would imagine that it reflects a desire on the part of the corporations who pay the rate for radio and television programs to use that time exclusively for the sale of goods and services. Is it in their own interest and that of the stockholders so to do? The sponsor of an hour's television program is not merely buying the 6 minutes devoted to his commercial message. He is determining within broad limits the sum total of the impact of the entire hour. If he always, invariably, reaches for the largest possible audience, then this process of insulation, of escape from reality, will continue to be massively financed, and its apologists will continue to make winsome speeches about giving the public what it wants or letting the public decide. We're engaged in a great experiment to discover whether a free public opinion can devise and direct methods of managing the affairs of the nation. We may fail, but in terms of information, we are handicapping ourselves needlessly. For if the premise upon which our pluralistic society rests, which as I understand it, is that if the people are given sufficient undiluted information, they will then somehow, even after long, sober second thoughts, reach the right conclusion. If that premise is wrong, then not only the corporate image, but the corporations and the rest of us are done for. To a very considerable extent, the media of mass communications in a given country reflects the political, economic, and social climate in which it grows and flourishes. We are currently wealthy, fat, comfortable, and complacent. We have currently a built-in allergy to unpleasant or disturbing information, and our mass media reflect this. But unless we get up off our fat surpluses and recognize that television, in the main, is being used to distract, delude, amuse, and insulate us, then television and those who finance it, those who look at it, and those who work at it may see a totally different picture too late. I do not advocate that we turn television into a 27-inch wailing wall where long hairs constantly moan about the state of our culture and our defense. But I would just like to see it reflect occasionally the hard, unyielding realities of the world in which we live. I would like to see it done inside the existing framework. And I would like to see the doing of it redound to the credit of those who finance and program it. Measure the results by Nielsen, Crendex, or Silex, it doesn't matter. The main thing is to try. The responsibility can be easily placed, in spite of all the mouthings about giving the public what it wants. It rests on big business and on big television, and it rests on the top. I began by saying that our history will be what we make it. If we go on as we are, then history will take its revenge, and retribution will not limp in catching up with us. We are, to a large extent, an imitative society. If one or two or three corporations would undertake to devote just a small fraction of their advertising appropriation along the lines that I have suggested, the procedure might well grow by contagion. The economic burden would be bearable, and there might ensue a most exciting adventure. Exposure to ideas and the bringing of reality into the homes of the nation. To those who say people wouldn't look, they wouldn't be interested, they're too complacent, indifferent, and insulated, I can only reply, there is in one reporter's opinion considerable evidence against that contention. But even if they are right, what have they got to lose? Because if they are right, and this instrument is good for nothing but to entertain, amuse, and insulate, then the tube is flickering now, and we will soon see that the whole struggle is lost. This instrument can teach, it can illuminate, yes, and even it can inspire. But it can do so only to the extent that humans are determined to use it to those ends. Otherwise, it's nothing but wires and lights in a box. There is a great and perhaps decisive battle to be fought against ignorance, intolerance, and indifference. This weapon of television could be useful. Stonewall Jackson, who is generally believed to have known something about weapons, is reported to have said, "When war comes, you must draw the sword and throw away the scabbard." The trouble with television is that it is rusting in the scabbard during a battle for survival. Thank you for your patience.
Again, that's Edward R. Murrow from 1958. It's going to be 60 years ago this October that he gave that speech in front of radio and television executives. 1958, 60 years ago. And it occurred to me when I was listening to this, putting it together, incidentally, slightly edited, took some stuff out. Obviously, you can go find the full speech somewhere else. Anyway, I was putting this together and it occurred to me that when he gave that speech in 1958, television wasn't much older. It was right about the same age as the internet is today. Relatively young medium, they were kind of figuring things out, finding their way. And Edward R. Murrow was a prophet in a lot of ways. Now, he lacked the context of the following 60 years. But in the ensuing 60 years, his fears were realized. And his vision was dashed. His admirable idealism was devoured by mammon's wolves. The profit margin. God money. We'll do anything for you. He had no concept when he was talking idealistically about giving the public information. He had no concept how this information, these competing ideas, if you want to call them that, I call it propaganda. I don't think they're ideas at all. That these ideas could be monetized and weaponized, turned into echo chambers the size he could not comprehend or even imagine. He didn't see that. It's no fault of his own. I mean, how could you expect him to see the development of cable television and the internet. These multiple access points delivered, hand-delivered into your hand the spin of choice that you choose. And one of his ideas, one of his main ideas, was that all of this starts at the top. That the responsibility for content lied with the media companies. And in his day, and in the relative youth of television and radio at the time, I can see that. I can see that perspective, that it's our responsibility to be responsible for our product, and the news media, the media companies, the networks, all of them, they all figured out eventually that they can monetize information, they can monetize news, they can monetize spin, and make obscene amounts of money doing it. So they failed. They absolutely failed. Miserably. Absolutely failed. So, my friends.
Oh, well, is he contradicting everything you said?
No, he's not. 60 years ago, it failed. Everything he feared came to fruition over the last six decades. So now, my friends, now it's up to you. If you care about the direction of the country, if you care about any semblance of a connection to fact, truth, now it's up to you. You have got to stop consuming it. You have got to excommunicate yourselves from the ideological churches. It is up to you. And again, going back to my earlier piece, I hope. I got very little of it. I don't think you want it. I don't think we want it collectively. I think that the tribalism's going to win. Again, I talked about my girlfriend's parents earlier. And her dad finding this piece of information on the internet, not bothering to find out if how he digested it and interpreted it was accurate. He didn't want to. Doesn't make him a bad person. All right? He's simply more interested in defending his ideology than seeking truth. He's not a unicorn here. He's not alone. And I can't walk upstairs and change that. He has to seek it out. And that is a really good metaphor. He is a really good metaphor, an example from the collective. You're looking for hope in that? There is none. Until we, as a culture, maybe as a species, maybe as high as a species, reject
personal truth.
Stop mistaking what we'd like to believe with truth and reality. Goes back to this chat I had with Aaron. Reality, truth, is singular. Versions of the truth are mistruths. Do you understand that? Can you? Cutting through the bullshit, our own and everyone else's, is hard enough, man. It really is. And doing it with this cacophony of advertising-driven agenda constantly screaming in our ears, it's impossible to do. This is what I was getting at when I spoke of synapse pruning and my useless shit epiphany. Getting rid of that which does not fucking matter to make room for that which absolutely does. It's essentially meditation. It's the same concept. Cutting through the noise to hear and see the truth. Reality. Ancient ideas that have never, ever, ever been more relevant. Disconnect and detox. You have to do it. You are responsible. And you, Obi-Wan, are our only hope. One other thing I want to get to. One other example I want to use while we're on the topic of Edward R. Murrow. Many in the media, among others, took Joe McCarthy's side when Murrow attacked him and did his expose on the blacklisting and the persecution of those just being accused without proof of being communists in the early 30s or the early 50s. Pitchforked, frothing mobs who have no commitment and no interest in the truth or facts is nothing new to the human experience, and it hasn't changed. As a very good example, it's not the sole example, but it's the one I choose, since it's my podcast, to use, is the Me Too movement. Now, am I advocating for sexual assault? No. If you think I am, cue it up, go away. Someone, and I'm not saying anyone has already done this, I have no idea, but it's coming. It's inevitable because you do not demand proof. Someone, like with McCarthyism and the Red Scare in the 50s, somebody's going to be falsely accused and persecuted. Now, Scott Baio and this Eckert woman, what's her name, Nicole Eckert? Eggert, that's it. Have you seen this? Something that supposedly happened 30 years ago. And no one can prove anything after 30 years, man. It's just his word against hers. But it's become acceptable, just as in McCarthy and Murrow's day, to accuse, tar and feather someone, label them as a cultural deviant, a sexual predator, without proof. You can do that now because the public accepts it. Just like certain parts of the public accepted labeling someone as a communist without proof, destroying their career, destroying their lives in the 1950s, blacklisting, ostracizing them. In the 50s, you could label somebody a commie and get away with it. Now in 2018, you can label them a sexual predator. Nobody seems to notice and nobody seems to care that you don't have a goddamn shred of proof. Part of the problem is that people don't know what to believe. There's so much information out there. So many competing stories, ideologies, points of view, versions of the truth, that without putting a great deal of work and thought into everything, they just decide to lazily believe whatever the hell they want to believe or whatever their feelings tell them they should believe. Facts be damned. They've given up. And worse, they've learned to exploit that nearly universal loss of connection to demanding that proof dictate how we interpret the world. Our unfiltered eyes, freed from the Quixote blur. It's a literal abandonment of commitment to truth. Alternate universes now, competing and opposing laws of factual physics. Competing and opposing laws of factual physics. That cannot end well. I'm not saying that everybody in the Me Too movement is a liar. And I'm not blaming the victim. But I'm telling you, if you abandon the burden of proof, sort of a habeas corpus, I guess, habeas corpus light, where you can't hold someone and their lives prisoner without proof of some sort. If you abandon that, you're running down a road that's going to be messy, where you can just accuse someone of a crime without having actually any burden of proof whatsoever and destroy their lives. That's dangerous. It's disturbing. And we've been here. We've been here before. Yeah. Sexual assault is the new communism.
Commie.
He's a predator. I can't prove it, but you'll believe me anyway. Because you're part of my mob.
I'm trying incredibly hard not to invoke the Salem witch trials here.
Witch, witch, witch!
I can't prove it, but she is.
And one final point on this. And Murrow mentioned it in his speech. But he mentioned subscribers.
That one way to get the advertising influence out of the media is to basically take on the HBO model. One of the programs I actually do like, and even if I don't really agree with the content 100% of the time, is John Oliver. Bill Maher does a good job as well sometimes, but again, he's a little too ideologically pure for me. Although less so than a lot of people. Listen to Maher's commentary on colleges and political correctness in Islam. And liberal apologies for Islam. He does a pretty good job, and he can do that because he's subscriber-based. You have got to pay a fee in order to get those programs, but you can't organize and attack Kia or Chevrolet or Ford and have him taken off the air. He went through this right around 9/11. He had Politically Incorrect. Remember that show? And he said that Those hijackers on those planes were anything but cowards. They flew planes into buildings. They weren't cowards. And he lost his job because of the outrage and the fact that his sponsors didn't want to be attached to him, and ABC didn't want to be attached to him because the sponsors wouldn't be there. At least as many of those were there before he said that. Now, he was fired. But he figured it out. If he went to HBO, he could say what the hell he wanted. No advertisers standing over him. So that may be the solution. Yeah, Murrow didn't think so, but this was 60 years ago. He didn't see cable television, I don't think, at that point in time. And I've said this before. I mean, maybe that is the solution. Maybe somebody needs to come up with a 24-hour news network that's paid. Right? But the problem is they would have to actually take the Murrow idea, his idealistic idea of just simple, basic, agenda-free information, and then depend on people to subscribe to it. Somebody would have to do that. I think it's a great idea. I think there's a hole there. I think it's worth a shot, since it's not my money. Of course, I think it's worth a shot. I don't know. I don't know how that would go. The optimistic side of me wants to believe that there are enough people who are actually interested enough in being part of an enlightened citizenry that they would pay for that. I don't know. The cynical side of me thinks, suspects that you're addicted to the outrage. You're addicted to the conflict. You like it. You see yourself as part of the crossfire model. You remember that show on CNN, Tucker Carlson? Paul Begala, I think it was? The liberal and the conservatives fighting it out. Y'all see yourselves as girding your loins up for battle on the ideological battlefield. I don't know how that would go, but I guess in the interest of sausage party hope, maybe? I have no idea.
People suck, and that's my contention. I can prove it on scratch paper and a pen. Give me a fucking Etch-A-Sketch. I'll do it in 3 minutes. The proof, the fact, the factorum. I'll show my work. Case closed. I'm tired of this backslapping, aren't humanity neat bullshit. We're a virus with shoes, okay? That's all we are.
Sugar helps the medicine go down.
But say what you want about America, land of the free, home of the brave. We got some dumbass motherfuckers floating around this country. Dumbass motherfuckers. Yeah? Yeah. Now, obviously, that doesn't include this audience. I understand that. You seem intelligent and perceptive, but the rest of them, holy jumping fucking shitballs. Dumber than a second coat of paint. And how do the people feel about all this? Well, they think it's just fucking dandy. They think it is cool as can be. But there's a reason. There's a reason. There's a reason for this. There's a reason education sucks, and it's the same reason that it will never, ever, ever be fixed. It's never going to get any better. Don't look for it. Be happy with what you got. Because the owners of this country don't want that. I'm talking about the real owners now. The big, wealthy business interests that control things and make all the important decisions. Forget the politicians. Politicians are put there to give you the idea that you have freedom of choice. You don't. You have no choice. You have owners. They own you. They own everything. They own all the important land. They own and control the corporations. They've long since bought and paid for the Senate, the Congress, the state houses, the city halls. They got the judges in their back pockets. And they own all the big media companies, so they control just about all of the news and information you get to hear. They got you by the balls. They spend billions of dollars every year lobbying to get what they want. Well, we know what they want. They want more for themselves and less for everybody else. But I'll tell you what they don't want. They don't want a population of citizens capable of critical thinking. They don't want well-informed, well-educated people capable of critical thinking. They're not interested in that. That doesn't help them. That's against their interest. That's right. You know something? They don't want people who are smart enough to sit around the kitchen table to figure out how badly they're getting fucked by a system that threw them overboard 30 fucking years ago. They don't want that. You know what they want? They want obedient workers. Obedient workers. People who are just smart enough to run the machines and do the paperwork and just dumb enough to passively accept all these increasingly shittier jobs with the lower pay, the longer hours, the reduced benefits, the end of overtime, and the vanishing pension that disappears the minute you go to collect it. And now they're coming for your Social Security money. They want your fucking retirement money. They want it back. So they can give it to their criminal friends on Wall Street. And you know something? They'll get it. They'll get it all from you sooner or later because they own this fucking place. It's a big club, and you ain't in it. You and I are not in the big club. And by the way, it's the same big club they use to beat you over the head with all day long when they tell you what to believe. All day long, beating you over the head in their media, telling you what to believe, what to think, and what to buy. The table is tilted, folks. The game is rigged. And nobody seems to notice. Nobody seems to care. Good, honest, hardworking people, white collar, blue collar, doesn't matter what color shirt you have on. Good, honest, hardworking people continue. These are people of modest means. Continue to elect these rich cocksuckers who don't give a fuck about them. They don't give a fuck about you. They don't give a fuck about you. They don't care about you at all. At all. At all. Man. You know? And nobody seems to notice, nobody seems to care. That's what the owners count on, the fact that Americans will probably remain willfully ignorant of the big red, white, and blue dick that's being jammed up their assholes every day. Because the owners of this country know the truth. It's called the American dream, because you have to be asleep to believe it.
I enjoy throwing that together, man. And it occurs to me that to some of you it may seem that using the George Carlin clip contradicts some things. Is it a vast media conspiracy or is it us? The owners of the country certainly don't want you capable of critical thinking. And it's your responsibility because you're making it goddamn easy on them.
How long? Not long! Because what you reap is what you sow!
What you reap is indeed what you sow. And if you're content with sitting inside of the echo chambers, going to your ideological church and leading and listening to your political evangelicals, convincing you that the other half of the country is just simply evil, buying into their version of reality, even if it's not even close to what the reality actually is, then yeah, you're screwed, man. And if that's going to continue, the divisiveness, the radicalization, the bilateral reactionary radicalization that's been taking place in the last 10 years, and particularly over the last couple, maybe three, it's going to get to the point where the sense of commonality is so frayed. We see the other half of the country as the opposition, the insurgency, the evil that's trying to come in and take the country away. Conflict is coming. And there's nothing that you're going to be able to do about that.
This makes no sense.
What about the extra virgin olive oil? My flaps will be dry for an eternity. I can't have dry flaps. I can't.
Okay, whoa, easy. Guys, easy. Look, I have a plan. We can run.
I can't run. I'll melt.
Okay, then we'll hide.
Where? I'm huge.
Then we'll fight.
I ain't fighting alongside a bunch of fruits.
What? Ever, you nut job.
So, we cannot run, we cannot hide, and we cannot stand up to them. So, basically, there's no hope, and we're royally fucked!
Hey, guys, you want to believe that? Or this?
I don't like bad things.
Me either. We choose the more pleasant thing.
Yeah, I mean, what this sausage is saying, it's just the theory.
No, it's not a theory, you morons. It's a fact.
Open your fucking eyes. Don't be so weak.
Yo, senor, have no bedside manner.
What? I have bedside manner?
You don't respect anyone else's beliefs.
You intolerant piece of shit.
They truly are monsters.
I tried to warn everyone, but they didn't believe me.
Of course they didn't. You just called them all a bunch of fucking idiots. You need to inspire them like you inspired me. You need to give them hope.
Oh, the sausage party hope. This is the bane of my existence right now. Because I know it's a huge problem for me. He's right. You call people fucking idiots enough, they don't give a shit what you have to say. That's true. You know, culturally, we've been doing that to each other for a really long time. It might be part of a bigger problem than just me. It's entirely possible. But yeah, what is it? I mean, what is the path forward? What is the sausage party hope in this case? I think what it is, what it boils down to, is you have a choice to make. We collectively have a choice to make. And it has to be a collective decision. It's not just you. And it's not just me. There has to be a culture-wide commitment to reestablishing a relationship, a personal relationship. Oh no, not with Jesus. With the fucking truth. With facts. Rather than relying simply upon things we want to believe. And interpreting that as reality. That's what has to happen. And beyond that, we have got to figure out a way to find some sort of authentic sense of what binds us. Who we are together. Politics aside, as Americans. That's the problem. Because right now, everybody sees the other as the enemy. If you're in the resistance, who are you resisting? And why are you resisting? Because you see Donald Trump and Trump voters as the enemy. Somebody who's trying to take the country away from you. And on the other side, all the way back to 2009, teetbaggers, you've been using the same rhetoric.
These socialists are trying to take a country away from us. We patriots gonna take it back.
Where is the middle ground here? That is what needs to be found. Where you can sit down at a table and look at a teabagger and look at a green teabagger and have them come to some sort of compromise and understanding that, hey, you know what? We're not enemies. I know you're not really a socialist pig. Hell, you're okay, fine. I know you're really not inbred. I see you have more than three teeth. That's where we have to get to. Where the things that bind us together as a culture and a nation, they have got to trump simple politics. No pun intended. It's got to become more important. And quite frankly, do you see that happening anywhere? No. You hear, you know, I've seen some talking heads, and I think some people are trying to sell books on the idea. But no, there's not any real authentic movement that has any semblance of unity. Now shut up, hippie. No, don't you even... equality, shut up. I really have no patience. I heard you. See, I have this ESP thing going on. I heard you. Unity via division. How does that work? Again, hippie, it's identity politics. I don't even want to hear it. You have no idea what unity is if you think that you're going to achieve it by dividing the country along gender lines and sexuality, race, demonizing all white people, especially white men. Come on. How is that going to work for you? It's not. But beyond that, what is going to work? I have no idea. I really don't. I've batted this idea around a little bit, and I guess that in the interest of sausage party hope, in the interest of channeling Barry and trying to inspire somebody with hope, the only thing that I've got that I think could possibly work, and whether it works or not in time, because what we're looking at is a cultural change here. I mentioned earlier, the media is not going to simply start force-feeding us facts. They have a job, and that job is to make money. George Carlin, in this piece I just played, was absolutely right. The owners own it. Rich people own it. They want your money. They want the advertising dollars. But they also really are getting a nice little side effect in this, in that their job's being made easy when it comes to controlling information. They can just split you down the middle. These guys over here are getting this. These guys over there are getting that. And meanwhile, everybody runs to the bank with their thumbs in their butts. And the country sort of gets torn in two. Well, a lot of people get rich. They do control the information. They do control your media. But that's, again, your fault. The reason you're getting the information you're getting is because that's what you want. They control it, but they're going to give you what you want either way. You're not going to be, you know, at the helm of a media ship leaking revenue out the bottom of the boat. Advertisers aren't going to buy advertisements on these networks if nobody's watching them. You see. So, anyway, back to the point. What do we do about it? What is it? How did we get to this point? How are we so easily detached from reality, yet so convinced we're all perceiving the truth, when these perceived truths are vastly different from each other? How does that happen? There's only one truth, kids. There's only one reality. You don't get your own personal fucking reality. I'm going to go into this in depth in one of these shows, one that's coming up real, real soon. You have a perception, a tiny sliver of reality. That's your perception. You don't get to call that the whole reality that we all share. That's part of the problem. Somebody has blown that rainbow glitter shit up your butt, and you've bought into it. I heard Oprah Winfrey. One of the things that really set me off about her, I heard her talk, we have to live our own truth. You don't get your own truth, bitch. You're not entitled to that. You get your experience and your perception. We share reality. Reality and truth are the same fucking thing. You don't get your own truth. You don't get your own reality. You don't get to define the reality we all share. I mean, how are we so easily manipulated by what appears to be almost an ingrained confirmation bias in our minds? This primitive informational tribalism. There's this sect, I can't remember the name of it, a sect of either Buddhism or Hinduism, I think it's Buddhism, that believes human beings are physically incapable of seeing reality. Can't do it. They think that it's just impossible for the human mind to perceive it. An authentic reality. See the world as it is. And since everything else in Buddhism and Hinduism seems to revolve around the ego, and without having read the full text, I just read like a summary, I'm going to assume it's because they believe, excuse me, that the ego blinds us so completely that it becomes impossible. Fogs our eyes. I don't quite buy into that impossible part. I think it is possible with a lot of work. But I think they're also onto something.
Huge, it's huge.
And it's also foreshadowing, because I don't think I want to start this today. But the first part of this goes back, for me, was sort of a, almost so like a seismic event when I stumbled onto this in 2009 in Port Townsend, of all places, after meeting Andre, after talking to Chris. And I call it the Don Quixote Complex. Because what it reminds me of is the novel. If you read it, you get the idea. But it has nothing to do with faking it to make it. That's what a lot of people take out of Don Quixote.
Oh, you want to be a knight? Act like a knight.
No. Maybe I'm getting a unique interpretation here. It's worth a read. But the part where he's attacking windmills, because he's seeing something that's not there, but he wants to see it. He wants that windmill to be the giant that I think was holding the princess hostage, right? And he had to be all chivalrous. He wanted to go save the princess. So he basically ran into some guy's field and attacked his windmill, because his eyes were so deluded by what his mind wanted to believe. That, my friends, is Don Quixote in a nutshell. Because I think you can take that trait and you could apply it well beyond a skinny knight riding a skinny horse with shitty armor. I think it's not an easy thing to delve into, especially personally, on an individual level, looking at it in yourself, because it's painful. Very painful. to see how often and how to what extent you're able and willing to see what's not there. A lot of it has to do with avoiding, as I mentioned earlier, cognitive dissonance, having your worldview intact and not being willing to see something that's going to create the anxiety because it conflicts with what you want to believe. So rather than changing beliefs, people change what they see. They change their interpretation of this new information. It's goofy, man. People are fucking goofy. It's ego. It's identity. You know, people that identify too closely with an ideology, it becomes part of who they are, with a lot of other things, careerism as well. But that identity stuff, where you see yourself as a crusading liberal, you're not going to want to see how identity politics is working against the whole idea of unity. Because that challenges the identity that you've assumed, you see. It's hard. Hard shit. You never get rid of it. I don't think you can ever get rid of it unless your name is Jesus or Buddha. I don't think it's something that you can be completely free of, but you can be aware of it. And that takes us to the next step, a commitment to truth in yourself, knowing yourself. Nasce te ipsum, or temet nasci, however you want to say it. Vitam impendere vero. I don't know Latin. So if I'm mispronouncing it, sorry. Truth at all costs, even to the point of death. But that's, I think, going back to the original point and the topic of this conversation, the topic of this podcast, I think that's where we have to go. And, yeah, I'm trying to think how much hope am I giving you here? Because what you're talking about, you can do this, but it's like a 350 million cells, or at least the vast majority of them, have to undertake this. And it's one of the most difficult things there is to do. Because it's a complete stripping down of who you are and what you believe and how you think. It's questioning your own adopted perceptions. But that's where it has to go. We have got to figure out how to get the culture and society recommitted to fact and truth. So there it is. It's not a very big sausage. But it's the only fucking way. I literally believe that. Because there is no political messiah on the way. There's nobody who's going to come and save us and bring us all together. I've been hearing this get together shit since, 9/11? We've got to come together. Fuck that. It isn't happening. Yeah, we do have to do it. But you're not going to do it under Oprah. Or Bernie. Or Hillary. Or Trump, obviously. Or Paul Ryan. There's no political messiah on the way. Whatever political candidate is going to be slung forth from either one of these swamps is going to be so offensive to the other that there's no prayer of any coming together politically. The political field is not going to do it. It will not come from the political realm. Not going to come from the spiritual realm. Jesus isn't going to come down and, you know, bless us all and sing kumbaya with us. What is going to do it? Commitment to facts, so you can actually have a basic fact-based, factually based conversation and begin the process of rediscovering commonality and compromise. That's the only thing that's going to work. If that doesn't happen, again, winter is indeed coming, if that's the case. If it doesn't happen, winter's here. And winter is here. As I wrap this thing up today, snow started flying. Lake Effect Snow Machine has kicked in. It's down to about, 8 degrees outside here in Kalamazoo, in the Mitten State. This was my most draining, I think, podcast so far. And coming up on the next one, I will get into, I call it the Don Quixote Complex, but there's a lot more to it than that, and it will continue on a lot of the themes that Rich Aaron and Chris and I discussed, I think, while I was in Peru. Truth. Reality. What is it? How do you get to it? All that stuff is coming, man. That's a huge, huge topic. It's one that's been batted around for thousands of years.
What is truth?
And it's reality, in my view. A big topic, man. It's not going to be quick and easy, and this is going to be some thick shit. I'm not talking about transmissions here, or baseball. I understand. This stuff's pretty heavy. Seems to be the theme now for podcasts to do 3 hours. One thing, I'm doing this by myself. 3 hours is an awfully long fucking time, especially for you to hear one voice for 3 hours. I think that's excessive. But also, there's a time investment involved here. I don't know how many people have 3 hours to give a podcast during the course of the week. That's a long time. And there's an exhaustion factor that if I'm doing this right and I'm actually making your neural net function and work and creating these new synapses in your brain as you think about things, it's tiring. So I'm trying to figure out a good time limitation on this, and I think we'll see. We'll let it evolve a little bit. I don't know what else to say. I think that's enough. Looks like I've recorded about 30 minutes in this segment. It's supposed to be about 5. That's that. This is the Escaping the Cave podcast, the Tonzilla X-Pod. I am on the Christopher Media Network, christophermedia.net. You can go over there. You can check out the other shows as well. And, by the way, going to remind you one more time, no social media. There's no Twitter. And there will not be a Facebook page with this podcast. So if you like it, if you think it's interesting, you think it's useful, whatever, I would appreciate it if you would share the shit out of it. You're going to be my marketing boys. I am not going to be doing any of that. So, as I've said in the first two podcasts, if this, if the Escaping the Cave thing spreads and goes anywhere and we continue to build listeners, followers, things like that, it's going to be because of you. It'll be word of mouth. It's not going to be
Twitter.
So, thanks in advance for doing that, and I guess we'll talk to you next time. So long.